listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 8th of October 2025. It's a day where the Australian share market fell, but only just by 0.1% to 8,947. That's on the S&P ASX 200. We'll have the details soon with Armina Rosenberg from Minotaur Capital. She'll also go through why the gold price hit through that $4,000 milestone, and she'll tell us how she's using AI in investing. But first, the Australian dollar surged to above $1.14 New Zealand today, a level last seen briefly in 2022 and then back in 2013 when the Aussie dollar was benefiting from the iron ore boom. Today's spike, though, followed a greater than expected 50 basis point cut in official interest rates by the Reserve Bank of New Zealand to 2.5%. That's despite a recent pickup in inflation and widens the spread between New Zealand and Australian interest rates, which are at 3.6%. For more, I spoke with the chief economist of ASB Bank in Auckland, Nick Tuffley. Nick, so 50 basis points is a big move from the Reserve Bank of New Zealand. Why was it needed, especially with inflation at the top of its target band?
When the Reserve Bank's looking ahead, whilst it is worried about inflation hitting 3% or so again in short order, what it's doing is looking ahead to next year where it is expecting inflation will fall back down. Now, the issue at the moment is our recovery has been pretty patchy and we did have quite a deep recession last year, and there's a lot of spare capacity hanging around. And that's what the Reserve Bank is focused on, the fact that there'll be a lot more downward pressure than it had been expecting on inflation when you're starting to look ahead to next year.
Can you maybe give us a bit of a run through on what the challenges the New Zealand economy is facing at the moment exactly?
From a New Zealand point of view, we had a very good initial COVID period. The economy just fired up. We had a massive amount of stimulus, but then like a lot of inflation pressure and a bit more persistent than what you've experienced in Australia. So we had interest rates at a very high level holding up for a long period of time. And last year, the lagged impacts of that really bit hard. And we've seen the economy sort of like kind of crash to a halt. So the Reserve Bank's gone into reverse very quickly, but it's just taking time for the impacts of those lower interest rates to come through because so many people fix their mortgage for a period. So the impact of lower rates takes a while to come through. So there's a little bit of watching and waiting happening. More and more people are getting more and more money left in their wallets. We actually do have a farming sector that's doing pretty well at the moment, but a lot of people are just still pausing and just sort of building up the cash and sitting on it at the moment rather than rushing out and spending it.
How much are the challenges that New Zealand is facing unique to the country, or is it shared with other parts of the world? As you mentioned, interest rates in New Zealand rose faster and higher than many other parts of the world, so hence they come down more. But, you know, places like Australia, the US, there's discussions that rates cuts may be delayed or even halted altogether.
From a New Zealand point of view, look, there's a lot of similarities with so many countries around the world. I think it's just more the extent of that inflation pressure was a little bit more acute and hung around a lot longer. So you had the Reserve Bank leaning quite hard for a long period of time. So it's been a more exacerbated cycle coming through here in New Zealand. Now for us, yes, inflation still looks like it's a bit sticky, but the bounce looks like it's driven by things like food prices. The sort of more domestic focused inflation is still coming down. Wage growth is still slowing, and the Reserve Bank's very focused on the fact that when you've got relatively high unemployment, you're going to have pretty subdued wages and businesses can readily up their output without there really being much price pressure.
How's this flowing through to the New Zealand currency?
Well, we've generally seen the New Zealand dollar come in a bit of pressure today. That was because the market was not wholly convinced it would get a 50. It was probably a bit more 40% odds of a 50. So I've seen a little bit of downward pressure come through at this point. But when you look back over the last year or so, look, the New Zealand dollar has generally held up to quite a large extent against other countries, even ones where they haven't been easing as much. It's the US dollar where there's been a lot of the volatility, and a lot of that's been down to our good friend Donald Trump.
And finally, what do you think this will mean for Aussies looking for value when travelling? Because we're seeing that currency at levels I think last seen in 2022, possibly even back to 2013, those Aussies looking to travel to New Zealand, are you already seeing an influx of Aussies going there?
We've generally seen over the last couple of years like a pretty quick rebound when Aussies started to travel more coming through, particularly to Queenstown, which is a great place for Australians to go and enjoy the skiing and the mountains. So we've seen quite a lot of recovery, but it's probably more plateaued this year, and that's probably saying a bit more around in Australia. You've got some of the similar pressures of higher interest rates not quite coming down, and people being a little bit more careful about traveling. But the currency will make a bit of a difference at the margin, as will the fact that it's a pretty short flight as well.
It's Nick Tuffley there from ASB Bank in Auckland. Let's take a look at the Australian share market now, where the S&P ASX 200 fell 0.1% to 8,947. Eight of 11 sectors were lower. The worst performing sector, consumer discretionary, followed by information technology and telecommunications, the best, healthcare. And if we take a look at the best and worst performing stocks today, the three best performing stocks includes DroneShield, up around 8%, Mesoblast up 8.9%, the best performer James Hardie 10% up today. Worst performers include Karoon Energy, Life360 and Helia Group, down by 3.6%. For more on the day's market action, including that new milestone for the gold price, I spoke with Amina Rosenberg, portfolio manager at Minotaur Capital. I mean, so the ASX is down today, while shares in the US also took a breather overnight, but they're still around about 100 points from records. So how would you describe investor sentiment at the moment?
Yeah, I think it feels cautiously euphoric right now. So positioning is still pro-risk in the US, but it's narrow and AI-led. And you're seeing a stark divide between Wall Street and Main Street, with like the economy data points continuing to be pretty weak. US consumer sentiment hit a four-month low. Payrolls data was weak. And market pundits like the CEO of JP Morgan, Jamie Dimon, he's using the word recession. And so as that's happening, you're seeing both the S&P and NASDAQ, you know, print new highs. So it's a very weird kind of, I guess, divide between what you're seeing over those two, economy versus the market. And investors seem like they're buying momentum, but watching the exits carefully at the same time.
You mentioned AI, right? Is there a fear that AI and investment in AI has run up too hard too fast? And also, how much of this run up in the market is also to do with US interest rates falling?
I think on rates versus AI, it's a combination of both. Like, you've obviously seen months of intense political pressure from President Trump on the Fed to ease rates, and hopes for the Fed cuts keeps the discount rates falling. So easier policy is definitely helping. And then investors continue to capitalize on the AI CapEx supercycle. You're seeing multi-billion dollar data center buildouts pulling forward earnings for things like chips, memory, and AI infrastructure. And that combination has overpowered, you know, the government shutdown headlines and the weak economic data. I think it's too complicated to say a definitive yes or no to the whole, like, I guess, fears that AI is a bubble. It feels like the air is definitely getting thinner at the valuation levels of some of the bigger players. And given what we saw with Oracle surge on cloud optimism last month, definitely adds to that. But, you know, for us, we think, unlike .com, which is obviously the easy comparator, there's real revenue and cash flow being generated. And if I just look at, you know, Minotaur ourselves, we could easily 1,000x our usage of large language models and tokens. So I'd say that we understand the why behind that huge investment better than most other investors. So it's tough. I think that there's a lot of names that still have a lot of earnings momentum, like the memory names and the energy transition names. And I think there's room to be selective and increase the breadth of what you're interested in. That said, you know, I think there are trillion-dollar buildouts that are happening, and they're being funded by ballooning debt. I think US tech companies have raised something like $157 billion in public debt this year, and any stumble in margins or capex could bite. So yeah, like, I think I kind of played both sides there, but yeah, the answer is it's complicated.
You mentioned what you guys are doing with AI very briefly. I want to touch on that in just a second. But one more news of the day issue, the gold price. It hit 4,000 US finally today. Run us through why, and do you like it?
I think gold has morphed from being an inflation hedge to a policy and politics hedge. So it's eclipsed its inflation-adjusted peak that was last hit in 1980, and investors are pricing in fiscal strain, data blackouts, and geopolitical risk. We've been doing a little bit of work on gold. Unfortunately, we haven't owned it in the portfolio, but I do like it as a diversifier. And actually, I think the opportunity could be seeing that breadth go into other precious metals like silver and copper and platinum and titanium. We look at a few quant indicator models as well, and they're flagging precious metals as being one of the top-ranked global industry on both revisions and momentum, which supports that structural bid that you're seeing.
Okay, you mentioned AI before. Can you run us through how you guys are using AI when you're looking at investing at the moment? I saw an interesting article recently about a comparison between what you're doing and a popular dating application.
Yeah, so we've developed our own proprietary in-house internal use only software, and we use AI and large language models in every step of the research process when it comes to, things like selecting and filtering and doing research on stocks to go into the portfolio. That we've called that software Torient because it's a combination of our company name, Minotaur, and orientation because it tells us, where to go and what to look for. People love the Tinder feature. So, once Torient brings us an idea, we can swipe left or right on it. And if we swipe right on it, that's basically us wanting a first date with the stock. And that means forming an initial impression of whether it's worth doing more work on or not. And when we've swiped right, Torient generates us what we call a snapshot of the company, which is a quick overview of what the company does, its revenue and earnings drivers, the bull and the bear case, what makes it interesting. AI writes that entire report. So it kind of tells us whether initially it's worth doing more work on the company. And then as we go, Torient, then you can think of Torient as like our digital twin, an analyst who basically does all of the grunt work for us and helps us think about and assess investments going forward.
How trustworthy is it? In other words, can you get catfished?
Love that comparison. Look, I think you can get catfished, but similar to Tinder, like you can walk into the bar, give a quick assessment of the person, and then walk back out if you want. That's kind of similar to us. So we do, deeper work and deeper dives on the company. We would never let Torient just run rampant on our portfolio and choose the ideas for us. That said, like some of the latest developments, like it's pushing further and further into what we do, so much more than we expected to when we initially kind of started using AI in our research process. We've now created our own AI agents that are dedicated to one company and one company only. So their tasks are to wake up and scour the world for news and developments about one stock. So they're basically like the analysts that we used to have, except, they don't complain and they work 24/7.
And finally, in wrapping up, what are you telling your clients right now generally, and where do you see the opportunities for investors? I know you mentioned a few of those names earlier on in the interview.
I think markets may seem a little heady, but the breadth of opportunities has widened. And we still think that the rest of the world, excluding the US, remains more attractive than the US itself. We think that there's the same exciting thematics that you see, but at better valuations elsewhere. I think you should own the cash flow nodes of AI, so things like memory and select semis and maybe power, thermal, and data center picks and shovels type plays. I'd be pairing them with durable defensives, so select healthcare and defensive names. And then, yeah, like to your point earlier, I think a precious metals allocation at the moment is a good sort of insurance policy for where markets are at this time.
Amina Rosenberg from Minotaur Capital. And she wraps up the podcast for this Wednesday. Don't forget, if you enjoy it, to give it a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Click that subscribe button. And if you want to follow me, you can find me on social media at Business Ricardo. See you tomorrow.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.